We're talking footy. This is Saturday Morning at the Football on 882 6PR, the voice of Perth.
Yeah, that's right, and you can join us after we have a chat to the AFL Footy Operations Manager in Mark Evans, who joins us on the program. Welcome, Mark. Thanks for your time, mate. Appreciate it.
No problems, guys.
Hey, first one I want to ask you, are the deliberate out of bounds, how have you seen its implementation into the season?
I think on the whole it's been pretty good for footy. There's no doubt it's reduced boundary throw-ins as it's supposed to. And as much as there have been a couple of contentious ones, the average increase in deliberates per game is only an extra free kick per game. And we've reduced boundary throw-ins by 20%. So I think it's been good. You always feel for someone where it's been done a little harshly. But I'd have to say that the most of the errors that we've had is where we've been a bit too soft.
Mark, I love the spirit of the rule. I think it's really enhanced the game as a spectacle and the players have adjusted very, very quickly. Can we get the same thing with the rush behind?
Yeah, I reckon you're right because there already was a difference between deliberate and rush behinds, and we've made that difference a whole lot greater this year. I think really what you see from the players around the boundary line now is so exciting that why wouldn't we bring that towards the deliberate rush? So something I'll talk to coaches and clubs about during the course of the year. I think we'll get pretty good support. Tough on defenders, but if it's exciting for the game, I think we have to look at the balance of all that.
Mark, Kim Hagdon here. But on defenders, another one that is confusing and I reckon needs to be looked at is a defender quite okay to deliberately punch in an intercept spoiling endeavour out of bounds. Could we see that tidied up as well, that be deemed as deliberate?
Yeah, so whether it's right or wrong, in the implementation of this stricter stance, we decided not to adjudicate aerial contests.
Mm-hmm.
I saw one at Etihad a couple of weeks ago. Mm. There was a person who was about to take what you thought was going to be an uncontested high mark on the boundary line, and the defender actually ran from 30 metres to just get there and did an amazing spoil at the last minute. Because he was belting towards the boundary line, there was nothing else that was going to happen. If he makes contact with the ball, it's going over the line. I think we've seen very clever defenders either tip the ball over the back or smash the ball towards the boundary line. So happy for us to have a look at it, but certainly in the implementation of this tougher stance, we decided not to do that this year.
Harry Taylor did it a few times last night, Mark.
He
was very, very, he wasn't trying to hide the fact that that's what he was doing. Would you go, and we saw it implemented into a NAB Challenge series some years ago about last touch, would you see that as maybe something that to extend it even further?
Well, South Australia are trialling a last kick, last handball. So not last touch, because I think sometimes there's just too many times where you almost can't tell who it's come off or it's been kicked into someone at the last minute and it rolls off their hip and goes out or something like that. So the SANFL are trialling last kick, last handball, and then still the tougher stance that we've got in terms of carrying the ball over or kicking the ball directly towards. And their boundary throw-ins are down by 40%. What they are doing, though, is they're paying an extra 6 or 7 free kicks a game to get that. We're paying an extra 1 free kick a game to get a 20% reduction. So it depends what you want. Hopefully for the SANFL guys, their free kick numbers will just keep coming down as people kick the ball more centrally or fight harder to keep it in.
Changing tack here a little bit, Mark. Have you given much thought to the idea of interchange only after a goal and what that impact will be?
Look, I have thought about it. When we were sitting at 155, 160 rotations, it was impossible to sell that one in. It would be too much of a variation from the game. And when we got down to 120, it was still with 3 subs or 3 interchanges, that still would have been too hard. Now we're at 90 with 4 interchange. That's you can basically have a 22-23 game goal game and get the same level of rotation. So I know that they will be unequal in terms of the time and how well spread out they are. But, you know, I sort of hope that we get 30 goals a game in any case. If every side kicks 14, 15 goals and another 10 or 11 scoring shots and they both get up near 100, I think that's usually a great game. So I would think there's potentially a possibility of trialling this in a future NAB Challenge.
Mark, Fremantle resting Matthew Pavlich today and making it quite clear that it was planned. They're saying it was planned prior to this season, but now that they're 0-7, some of us will be looking at how they monitor their selections and so on in coming weeks. How closely will the AFL monitor their selections to just ensure that there's an integrity there, that they're trying to win games as opposed to just develop their list?
Yeah, I think if you take the latter position to one side just for the moment, I would have thought it was pretty smart play for looking at either. I know they've done it for Aaron Sanderlands in the past as to how many flights he has across the country. And for Pav, and for Matthew Pavlich, it's not about playing every single game of the season. It's about the quality you can get out of each game. So I can understand the management of individual players. The AFL would always look at it if it was done en masse, particularly if you felt that that wasn't the only reason they were trying to do it. So, no, certainly no issues at round eight of the season.
Yeah, so you should be allowed to play anybody that's on your list, shouldn't you? I mean, as long as you say, it's not without reason, that should be the way that it's viewed?
I think that's correct. It would be if you decided to rest a dozen players and you're clearly not trying to win a game, then that raises a few eyebrows, because I think for your fans' sake and even for your own players' sake, it's always good to teach winning habits. And even if you're not in a great position to win, certainly is something to teach young players about always trying to be your best.
Mark, I'd like to talk about the expansion clubs for a moment. It's been an eventful week as far as those clubs are concerned. Did the AFL have any dialogue with the Brisbane Lions Vice President Lee Matthews after his comments that Southeast Queensland can only really cater to one team?
I saw Lee last week, and for those people who know Lee, he'll always just give you his opinion. You're not prosecuting or arguing a case just for the sake of it. It's just Lee's opinion. He probably would also recognise, since he made that statement, that he probably could have qualified to say that the AFL gives a lot of support to Brisbane, and in part that is to recognise how tough it is up in Brisbane and in Queensland and New South Wales to generate the interest in football and get a commercial return from it. So there are many clubs who get dividends above and beyond other clubs to help them with their challenging markets.
And obviously you'd be fully aware with GWS's Tony Shepherd's strong comments about the ineligibility of Todd Marshall as a GWS Academy pick.
Yes, I read that today and didn't quite get it right. I did not drive to Wagga Wagga. I think Todd Marshall lives in Deniliquin and I certainly didn't go there. So, but there was some issue with the registration of Todd. He's only just come into the program back from cricket. The Murray Bush Rangers invited him to come and play. He played one game for GWS in their NEAFL team. So it's not like he'd been a five-year academy player that's been ruled out. And my understanding is there's plenty of others for them to choose from this year.
Mark, another one with a very West Australian-centric slant. We're touching there about expansion clubs. You've poured, you know, hundreds of millions into GWS, Gold Coast. How mindful are you that the second-tier competitions, like the Waffle, are in need of more funding? And can we expect more in next year's new CBA arrangement?
Had Gavin Taylor came across to the CEO's conference, I think it's the first time South Australia and WA CEOs have been present at the AFL CEO's conference. And in part it's because looking at the future directions of football, we think we've got a lot to do in the talent pathway, a lot to do in terms of the offerings that you give kids to bring them in the first place, and exactly what that means for state leagues. We need to investigate that. So all sorts of things get thrown around. Do you have a national second-tier competition 20 or so years down the track? Or do you, at the moment, we find better and more efficient ways to be able to manage those state leagues? I, for one, think that there's a big cost problem at a lot of levels in football. I think we have to genuinely look at how we can reduce costs so that we can make those competitions as strong as possible.
Are we going to have proper goal line technology, Mark? Because we've got itsy-bitsy goal line technology at the moment. Some grounds it's good and some grounds it's just awful.
Yeah, I think you're talking about camera positions and particularly whether there are goal line cameras, and they certainly help. We've rolled them out to matches, to stadia where they have at least a match a week, so we've got them in four. And the plan is to get them to as many stadia as we can in the new TV rights deal. We'll certainly be able to get to a few more stadia, but we won't, for instance, be able to fit out if there's a game in China, the cost for setting that up in China would be probably prohibitive. Places like Alice Springs or Darwin, where there's only one game, there's so much cabling and infrastructure to do that we probably wouldn't do that. But we certainly will try and improve it. In terms of the goal line, in terms of the score review system, prior to this weekend, I think we'd had 39 or 40 reviews and corrected 9 scores. And sitting even with the venues that don't have the goal line cameras, we're getting a conclusive rate of about 83-84%, so, and only taking 22 seconds. So we've got it to a workable level. We've got people who are better trained than they were a couple of years ago. And I think you're right, the next step is how do we roll the goal line cameras out to a few more venues.
You had the Chief Executive Officers meeting during the week, Mark. One thing I'd like you to just elaborate on are the changes to the hair testing out of season with regards to privacy.
Yeah, well, don't think there's been any significant change to what we had proposed. We do go and talk to clubs about their results, and we want to continue to do that. The AFL Players Association have supported us with that. There was a story, some speculation by a journalist on the start of the season about one club. It was a speculation. The figures weren't correct, but the AFL Players Association certainly felt that was some sort of a breach. Difficult to say when someone gives a wrong number, you can't get up there and smash it because the first thing they ask you is, well, what's the right number?
Mm-hmm.
So difficult situation, but what we will do is continue to work with clubs and the Players Association and develop the best strategies that we can for the players.
I've been hot for a number of years, Mark, the need to clean up the clock. I mean, such saturated television and broadcasting and radio coverage. The clock to be cleaner when the game is stopped as opposed to not, and the shot clock in itself, should that go?
I'm not in the same camp as you about the clock. Mm-hmm. I sit there and think probably the biggest call that I get would be when there's a recall about, and you know, you've dribbled 3 or 4 seconds out of the game as that happens. And I was looking at a way that we could do that. I think that particular reversal would be quite easy to do. When you actually sit down and study a quarter of operation in the clock, it's reliant on the umpire signalling time at the correct time, and then the timekeeper being as close to possible as switching the clock on or off when the umpire does. And there would be discrepancies at 20 or 30 events per quarter where you might lose a second or a second and a half. I wonder whether we've become too pedantic about the clock, and maybe a system like soccer is a much more easy system to manage. I'm not suggesting that we go to that, but I'm not sure that we should worry about a second or two here or there, given the number of times that the clock starts and stops.
Not sure if it was high enough on the agenda to discuss with the CEOs, but the prospect of maybe a top 10 final system, Mark?
No, don't do that, Mark.
Something that was thrown around when we were really discussing the 17-5 fixture, where you play all of the other teams in the first 17 weeks, and in the last 5 weeks, that the league would split into three groups, the top six vying for what spot in the finals order, the next six vying for a couple of spots in the finals, and the last six potentially vying for draft order or something similar. It hasn't been discussed for 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
The CEOs at 12 months ago thought that it needed far too much work for them to contemplate at the moment. I still think it's something that is worth modelling. Even if we didn't go with it, sometimes modelling something new gives you different ways of thinking about what you're doing presently, and there might be some innovation you could bring in that would actually be of assistance. During that 17-5 discussion, there was the point was raised by at least one of the CEOs, would you then change it to a finals 10 where you lock the top six away and you've got four clubs vying for the last two spots somehow at the end of round 22. Now, the whole system didn't get support 12 months ago, so we haven't really progressed that.
Finals 10 rewards mediocrity. That's what I want to say, Mark, because you've got teams that only win half amount of their games and they don't deserve to play finals. I'd rather see the best teams play, say, a home and away style fixture whereby they play one final on the East Coast and then one on the West Coast if it's a West Coast team, and maybe it's played on aggregate, given that you know, that would see the best teams playing more often deservedly in finals.
This is my point, is every time you throw up a new idea, someone then brings up something that you haven't thought of,
yeah,
that could potentially be something to drive further thought for.
Well, I'd rather see that. I'd rather see the better teams, mate, than rewarding teams that only win 11 games. Let's be honest. I mean, if teams that only win 11 games out of 22, they don't deserve to be in any rotation of finals, I don't think.
For a long time, we've had half of the teams making the finals, even in a...
yeah, but I've never agreed with it, mate.
Plenty of leagues with 10 teams that have a final five or 12 teams that have a final six. So if you go by the maths of that, then the bottom team gets in winning half their matches.
Yeah, all right. Thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it. We've covered a few things, so we'll throw it out to our audience and see where we finish. Thank you, mate.
Cheers.
Mark Evans and the AFL Footy Operations Manager. So there you go. Hot for debate now on the back of the issues we've raised there. 922-1882. It's 23 minutes to 11.
Saturday morning of the football.
For Kennards Hire, official equipment hire partner of West Australian football. And Pedders, the place to go before you tow. Laying a path or building a factory. So go on, make your next job easy with Kennards Hire. 135 135. That's 135 135. Kennards make your
job easy. Come to Australia's home of craft, the Craft and Quilt Fair. Shop, learn, make and be inspired. See amazing displays of quilts, embroidery, fantasy fashion, fabric printing and felt making. Discover new ideas in more than 70 hands-on workshops.